You are listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprungs disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprungs with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 137 of Tom's Hirschsprungs podcast. I'm joined by Lex this afternoon. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi.
Thanks so much for coming on. We've got a heck of a story to unpack, from what I gather, and it's something I'm really looking forward to sort of delving into. But would you like to take us, back to the beginning, with your child being diagnosed with Hirschsprungs, or perhaps even sooner than that?
Frankie was born at 38 or 39 weeks, so he was perfectly full term, by a C-section, totally planned, went perfectly well. He was eating great. The only thing was that he could not stool. Within the first 12 hours, he was perfectly normal, but by hour 13, he was vomiting. He'd become distended. And I remember paging the doctor as a nurse, and it was so funny to me now because I look back and I'm like, why did I say that? But I was like, hey, my kid just puked and my kids don't puke. He's my second child. My kids don't puke. My kids could be pukers. This is my second. Who knew? But I knew that wasn't right. And so they came and they took him and they were looking him over and they're like, well, let me go talk to the doctor and then we'll come back. And she comes back and they walk in and before they even say anything, I see the NICU badge on the doc and I just knew. I just knew they were about to take my baby to the NICU. And my heart sank because my first was a NICU baby as well. Where I live, it's very common for babies to need oxygen. So my first needed oxygen for the first 13 days of his life. So to repeat that was like a shell shock almost. That was the worst pain that I felt, like worse than the C-section. So they took him to the NICU. I couldn't follow. I was so broken up about it that I looked at my husband or my boyfriend at the time and I said, you know, I don't want to breastfeed anymore. We'd already discussed before I had Frankie that if he went to the NICU and I couldn't latch him, I wouldn't breastfeed. So I knew that was gone. And then it became, well, he can't digest formula. We get him to the NICU and we finally get him fed and he's not able to digest formula. So that's another entire thing. But we're at a hospital that can't handle him. So they rush him. They air flight him to the Children's Hospital by us. It's a 10-minute drive and he was so unstable, they had to life flight him. It took me a year to realize that if they life-flighted him, he had to be unstable because no insurance is just going to cover a life-flight for no reason.
No.
So we get to the NICU. He's 2 days old. He's in children's now. I'm 48 hours postpartum, and I'm rushing post-C-section out of that hospital, demanding to be discharged to follow my son because I'm not going to stay in this hospital while he's in another. So they discharge me. We rush, and we try to race the helicopter. Obviously, we can't race a helicopter. They only get there and they're like, well, we definitely think it's Hirschsprungs. And I had no clue what that was. I had never even heard of it. Funnily enough, at least when we were asking about it, one of the things they did when they were testing was they stuck a finger up him, which is horrible. When they pulled it out, it shot across at a new doctor that they had. So it got him on the irrigation gown. That was funny to me, at least. I barely remember most of the NICU stay, but I remember that. By day five, he had his ostomy placed and he'd been on TPN the entire time. At the time that they placed the ostomy, they wanted to rush and pull his PICC line and take him off TPN, which is IV nutrition. And I pushed back. I didn't understand why in the moment, but my gut said, we can't do this fast. We cannot rush feeding him. And no one listened to me and they rushed feeding him anyway. And we got him home after 30 days and he just dropped weight. He could not gain weight. We were emptying his bag 5 or 6 times a day. He was eating like he was supposed to, and he wasn't gaining anything. So we readmitted for a week, and they kept him for a week to make sure we were actually feeding him. At the time, they called it monitoring, and we didn't know what was happening. But they were monitoring his weight. They were monitoring to make sure we were actually taking care of him, because he was also on Thickener at the time. My kid has been on Thickener his entire life. He has we're not sure why, but he has a swallowing difficulty. Both my kids do, actually. They're both on level 2 Thickener. So they were making sure that we were actually taking care of him because it's never been easy. it's making his bottles used to take 30 minutes. You'd have to heat the milk and then add the powder and then wait 20 minutes for it to thicken and then test it. And then it'd be wrong. You'd redo the whole thing. Luckily, we got to come home from that a bit. And we stayed home for 6 days. Those were the best 6 days of my life. He was so tiny and little and happy. But we went back in. And we went back in hard. We stayed for 7 whole weeks. Yeah. That was a whirlwind. I had no clue what was going on. I didn't understand why I was feeding my kid and he wasn't gaining weight. I was giving him his meds. He wasn't gaining weight. Nothing worked. So they admitted us to the surgery floor and we stayed on there for a couple of days. And I remember, she's my best friend now. She's one of my best friends now. But there was a nurse there and she's like, "You're really going to leave Frankie? Because we leave him at night. Because he sleeps in the night." And I was like, "Yeah, we are. I promise he's fine." And she judged us hard for that. A lot of them did. We've been judged very harshly. There's even a note now in my son's chart that says, mother of child has medical trauma, because I have medical trauma from my childhood, and cannot stay bedside. She will also sometimes have to walk outside of the room. Please don't block the door. Because in the NICU, I can't believe I forgot to tell this part. In the NICU, when he was not tolerating formula, I pushed for donor breast milk from a bank because I can't produce enough. I've never been able to produce enough. And the NICU doctor said no, because he thought I was going to get unofficial donor milk from like another mom off Facebook or something, which would be dangerous in the NICU. And that's not what I meant. And so they banned the use of my breast milk. Any milk that I made, they refused to feed him because they couldn't trust the source of it. I spent $1,200 feeding him for 2 weeks in the NICU donor breast milk. He couldn't tolerate formula. They wouldn't give me a prescription. They wanted me to sit there and they wanted to watch me pump. And I couldn't do it. Like, that's why that note got put there, is because they called me a liar. They blocked the door. I had a full-on mental breakdown, like full-on sobbing. Couldn't talk. And then the note got put in. But when we admitted for 7 weeks, I am all over the place. We were feeding him every 3 hours. This kid is 18 months old and still is being fed every 3 hours by bottle. He just wasn't gaining weight. And he was getting dehydrated and they were watching him. And I didn't know what was happening. Like, I remember at one point, he didn't even have a GI doctor. Like, he was having all these weight gain problems and he was just being managed by surgery. And he had a great surgery team, but that's not their job. Their job is to cut. And so finally, at one point, I had called Dr. Woods in Ohio and was like, "What do I do?" And he's like, "Well, we can't do anything while he's admitted." And I'm like, "What do I do though?" I'm like, threatened to move him, threatened to transition him. I'm like, "Okay." So I walked in and I said, "Look, either you guys figure something out or we're going to Vanderbilt," because that's where I'm from. I'm from the South. So going to Vandy is what I know. "We're going to Vanderbilt and we're going to fucking get him fixed." Very next day in walks a GI doctor with another GI doctor on a computer. If you're from America and you've ever seen Zoe 101 with the computer teacher, it's the exact same thing. But pushed this guy in. I've never met him before in my life. I've not met him before since. And he goes, "I'm going to say something super scary to you, but I need you to trust me. Do you want to keep him here until we get the central line removed? Or do you want a central line placed permanently? And do you want to take him home?" Knowing the risk that carries. Then I went over the risk. And I sat there for a minute. And I was raised in a medically complex household. So like the medical jargon, the in and out of the hospital, that's whatever to me. But a central line, that can be deadly. But also starving to death is deadly. And I didn't want him growing up in these hospital walls. So I said, "Fuck it. We ball. Let's do it." And we did. We brought him home after 7 weeks. He got his central line placed April 1st. They taught us everything that whole week to take care of him. And he came home April 8th. And then he spent 412 days with that central line. After that, he admitted, in the past 12 months, he's admitted 25 times. Between just GI bugs, respiratory viruses, minute fevers to make sure that it wasn't like a central line infection. He did have one actual central line infection in October that literally came out of nowhere. And they were so excited and proud of me for catching as fast as we did. I think it was my first viral video, actually, because I happened to be reporting for a colorectal surgery video. And it just so happened that before that, while I was reporting, I found his fever and I was like, "Oh, fuck." And we rushed to the hospital. And that's when the first time I ever went viral. That was crazy. That was never my intention. All I ever wanted to do was to talk about Hirschsprung's and short gut syndrome and intestinal failure and what all it takes. But that was so cool. And he is so cool. I wish he was awake so you could see him. I hope he wakes up before we're done because he's gotten so big. He has fought so hard. He went from when they discharged us from the hospital in the beginning, he was eating 8 ounces a day. And before his pull-through connection, I got him to eating 24 ounces. From eight. Like, safely and absorbing it. And, you know, some people are like, well, the short, what confused me too is like, you know, your short bowel is what's supposed to absorb all the nutrients. And Franklin had all of his short bowel. He should have been able to absorb his nutrients. But for some reason, he had a dysmotility issue that he just couldn't. He just couldn't. The second we got that colon back in place, though, and it's only like 40% that he has left, it took off like crazy. He started being able to gain weight. He started being able to eat more. I will say, and I can say this here, I feel like, fuck dilations and irrigations. Just fuck them. I still have to do irrigations every day, twice a day. And I'm blessed enough that I'm part of the paid parent caregiver program here in Colorado. But there's not enough money in the world that makes it worth it. I've had way too many, like, way too much of my therapy sessions that I've had to, like, spend time actually talking about that and, like, working through that because that was the hardest thing to have to do. And I'm so glad dilations are over for us. But irrigations feel like they'll never be over.
Yeah, it's a tough one. It is. I mean, from parents, a lot of parents that I've spoken to who have been through that process, it is... Yeah, there's no way around it. It's not good. It's not good at all.
It's not fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not great, but it's why I really wanted to chat to you because it's a really interesting story, is Frankie's story. And it's not necessarily, I mean, if there is a textbook Hirschsprung's, which I'm not really sure that there is, it's not really kind of a textbook, was diagnosed after 48 hours, etc., and then, you know, carried on from there. But when was Frankie diagnosed?
Day four of life, officially. Day four. We knew it was Hirschsprung's more than likely from the beginning. But day four, we had a rectal biopsy done, and they placed his ostomy. And then they took him back in on day five. And did another rectal biopsy to find out exactly where his transition zone was. Because he was so little, they couldn't do it all in one go. He has had 14 surgeries.
It's a lot. It's a lot in such a short space of time. I mean, Hirschsprung's is an odd one where you will have people who will have maybe a couple. And that'll be that. But then I've known people who've had upwards of 140, you know, and that, you know, that's on the extreme end of the scale. And then there's sort of everything in between. And it doesn't really, because you said it around 40% of the intestine left. So talking long segment there.
Yep.
So so obviously that's going to have more complications the more that's affected potentially. But yeah, 14 surgeries, that is a lot. And how's he sort of coped with all of those?
You know, honestly, the first couple, from what I can remember, he acted like he had just had surgery, and you would expect. But the past few, I'm telling you, I don't know how he does it. He pops up like he hadn't just had anything done. When he had his 9.5-hour pull-through, and still had an epidural in, he was standing and walking that night in the ICU. Like, had to get a sitter. Like, he powers through in a way that I have never seen in my life. Like, he is so strong. It is crazy. He has an insane pain tolerance.
That's amazing. but then you kind of, and I don't know whether it's the same with everybody with Hirschsprungs, but you do see that a lot with people with Hirschsprungs, is that they do have a huge pain tolerance threshold. And I don't know whether it's because of a lot of surgeries happen when we're younger, potentially. So you do kind of have, you do sort of have that pain tolerance, because we can't, again, a lot of surgeries happen before we can walk, before we can talk. So we can't necessarily express how we're feeling at that age. So I don't know whether we just kind of suck it up and, we just sort of have to just grin and bear it because we can't really talk, which obviously brings potentially its own problems down the line, maybe. But yeah, I'm not surprised when I hear people say that their children have really high pain tolerance thresholds, because it just seems to be that's kind of the way Hirschsprungs is, I guess.
It's a crazy thing to think about. It's also so sad. Like, it's very, like, there's a part of it that is very, he's cool. He's cool and he's so strong and it's so cool. And it's also like, so damn sad. Like, these are little guys. These are just little babies that are having to go through this. And it's the freaking worst.
Yeah. 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 It is. It is. And it's, it is. But it's also, unfortunately, the sort of, the kind of the way Hirschsprungs is. And I'm always hesitant when talking about Hirschsprungs to talk in definites, because people tell me a lot of definites with Hirschsprungs. Well, this happens and that will happen and this will happen. And it's just not, it's not always the case. And everybody's different with Hirschsprungs, which then is also an issue, because we kind of want, sometimes we want to know what's going to happen in the future. And it's just, sometimes it is a wait and see. And I guess that's also a really frustrating part.
It's very hard. I mean, and I even remember, like, sometimes, like, I found it difficult in the beginning when, like, other Hirschsprungs kids or, like, adults would be like, oh, he's going to be fine. He's going to be fine. And I'm just like, guys, he's starving to death. He is starving to death. He is not fine. It didn't feel like he was going to be fine. And looking back, I was very ridiculous about it. But, like, it is, when everything's so different, like, how do you even provide support to other Hirschsprungs people? Because, like, every journey looks so insanely different. Like, we've done in so much genetic testing on both of our boys to try to figure out if it's a genetic thing, and there's nothing there. And then you've got someone else who has Hirschsprungs, and theirs is definitely genetic. And, like, that's an entirely different story, too, what that looks like.
Yeah, I mean, this was brought up quite a lot at the Hirschsprungs conference that I went to a couple of weeks ago as we sit here and record this. And obviously there, again, they can't talk in absolute definites of, but they know a bit more than sort of I knew and everybody else knew, and they know a lot more than me. And they were talking about genetics and about how, I think the facts they gave was that if you have a parent with Hirschsprungs and then you have a child, 20%, and then sibling is 4% chance in terms of genetics. But again, that's roughly. I don't think that's exactly, the way. So it is. But what did you find from genetic testing?
Literally nothing. It drove us all insane, because both my boys have a swallowing difficulty. Both my boys have a slight breathing problem. Both my boys, one for sure has Hirschsprungs. The other has what might be short segment, but no one will work up. And we're just kind of waiting and seeing. So it's just, it's a fun time. It's a fun time, and there's nothing else to next came back. We've done genetic panels with Denver and Anschutz, and like they're a research hospital, so they're great. We've done genetic panels with our pediatrician. Nothing comes back, and they just say science hasn't caught up yet. We don't know. We're not saying that the boys don't have a genetic mutation, but we just don't know yet.
Yeah, and but there's so many people that talk to me and they say that, oh, it's genetic. So if you have Hirschsprung's, then you're going to have a child with Hirschsprung's. That's not necessarily the case, because I've met people with Hirschsprung's who then have children who then don't. Their children don't have Hirschsprung's. So that's not necessarily the case. But it's a tough one, because trying to find out a definitive answer just doesn't seem to be, like you say, the science isn't quite there yet. So trying to find out yes, no, you know, there's a lot of people that I meet where it is sporadic. It is. I mean, and I'm one of those people as well, where, you know, none of my brothers have Hirschsprung's, but I do. You know, there's no Hirschsprung's in my wider family at all. But then there's a lot of people like me where there's just one person, and you were the unlucky one, I guess. And that just seems to be the case, which is not very helpful, really.
No, it's not. It's a very frustrating disease sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's absolutely, because I think, you know, just all of us as human beings, we just want answers. You know, we just kind of want, well, okay, this happened and this happened, therefore this happened. And I don't think Hirschsprung's is, you know, I guess like a lot of conditions, I don't think we're alone in this at all. You know, we just kind of want, we want answers, and we want to know, you know, why this happened and why that happened, but it's just not there yet. But I think one of the things that I have seen you do is, it was one of the first place I found you was via TikTok, and doing like lots of, like you said, with the viral TikTok as well, that seemed quite scary. It must have been quite scary at the time. Yes, yeah, you do post a lot of really good info, which is fantastic, and it's all as you're going through it as well, so it's all in real time. So, like, huge kudos to you for that, because again, that must be, whilst you're going through it, to then post and must be so valuable for a lot of parents. Have you found that as well? Have other people sort of reached out to you?
That's the craziest part, and the part that makes me the happiest, is that it has. It's found me other Hirschsprung's families. It's found me other ostomy families. It's found me other short gut families. It has brought me so much closer and so much community. And I've gotten so many messages from other families being like, your videos, like, you're so real. Your videos, like, you bring light to my life. Like, you help me so much. Like, I couldn't do this without you. And I mean, those mean so much to me, because like, I am just a shy girl. I am very awkward. I don't go out much. I don't before Franklin, I never really posted, like, but I felt a calling to like bring awareness and not feel so alone. And like, that's what it started as. Truly. It started as like a diary and a way to speak out and a way to not feel so alone. And it became advocacy. And I think that's so cool. I think something that I built out of complete brokenness, because if you scroll way back, you'll see that like it was truly me mourning the beginning of what I thought Frankie's life was supposed to look like, to build that into something so cool and to gain over 7,000 followers from like 200 is insane to me. And I know to some people that's nothing, but to me that's
a lot.
Insane. It's a lot.
If you put, you know, found a room that could fit 7,000 people in, you'd be surprised about how big that room is.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I think it really is, and I think we're along the same wavelength there of just kind of, you know, and like a lot of people, where Hirschsprung's is or can be quite a lonely condition, because it's not like you're going to meet your next door neighbor who has Hirschsprung's, or even anybody in the same town as you that has Hirschsprung's, and to kind of think, right, well, I'm gonna do something, and I'm going to, you know, raise awareness, or I'm going to try and find people who have this and try and show, in your case, try and show Frankie that, you know, he's not alone, that other people have this condition, and it's, you know, it is out there in the world, because we can feel quite alone at times. But it's, yeah, so, but I think what you do with your page, and obviously having as many followers as you do, you're obviously doing a lot of things right, and a lot of people who are very engaged with your content as well, because it is real life, and I think a lot of people do really like that kind of stuff.
Thank you.
But I think showing the sort of, you know, real aspect of it is valuable, because again, it's one of those things, kind of like I said before, where people are going through maybe not exactly the same as you, but maybe a similar sort of path, and they want to be able to see that somebody else is going through that as well, and that somebody is kind of, so again, it's not feeling alone on that journey, which I think your content really provides. But yeah, so I think what you do is fantastic. Really do.
Well, thank you so much.
But it's kind of the great thing about social media. There's a lot of bad things about social media, which, which of course we could spend hours and hours going through, but we won't. There's a lot of bad things about social media, but a lot of great things that it does is it brings people together, and it shows people that, you know, because I'd never find anyone with Hirschsprung's without Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, whatever. Like you're not gonna necessarily find anyone, but with this we can, which is great. I think I've also slightly sidetracked you from Frankie's story. I think we sort of picked up and then we sort of veered off. So apologies for that. I'm trying to remember where we got up to. But you will know probably better than me.
I think we are at to where he was getting admitted all the time, which was just, yes, basically neighbors. So with a central line, any fever over 38 Celsius or above is considered an emit. You get cultures drawn, you know. So we did that song and dance a bunch because babies catch fevers constantly. But back in October, he got a fever. It was the day we were supposed to go see the infamous Dr. De La Torre. That's who we did our pull through. We were very blessed. And I went to pick up Frankie out of his swing and I picked him up and he was just burning up. And I was like, oh, fuck, here we go. And sure enough, I rushed into the hospital and we're up there and they pull the cultures. And within like hours of pulling the cultures, he popped positive for a couple of viruses. And it's, I don't know, maybe a week after his last revision surgery. So he's just been in the hospital. So, like, we know what happened. They admit him, and they keep him. They keep him for a week. We're doing vancomycin and something else. I can't remember at this point. Where they just run him. Ceftriaxone. Vancomycin and ceftriaxone is what they ran. 24/7. For weeks, we ran that. They ran it for a week in the hospital till they got his cultures clear. And then he came home. He did another week's course of antibiotic balls that he hooked up to. Little balls that he had a little splitter on his central line. He drug around everywhere. And his kid is strong because, yes, he would. You would think that he would use his little, like, wheeler to move his bag. No, he would just pull it. He would just drag it. Antibiotic ball, TPM bag and all. No shame, no fear. We were very blessed that it was his only central line infection the entire 412 days. Because that could have been way worse. It scared me straight. That's for sure. I think I'll forever be afraid of fevers. I don't think that I will ever be okay with a fever again. He did really well with it, though. Once he started eating, we knew he was going to get better. It was so weird because I blew up then and I was like, everyone was like, let me send you money. And I'm like, oh, well, you can. But like, I don't really know how I feel about that. Or like a couple of moms that lived in the Springs, which this I did take up on, was like, let me bring you food. And like, that was so nice. And I still don't know how we got through that, honestly, because I thought truly when he was infected that I was going to lose him. Which is a common theme with me. So, like, I constantly think one of my children are going to just die. So, like, to have a medically complex kid that really could was not a fun thing for me. But he survived it, and he got through, and we got to see De La Torre in November. And once we saw De La Torre, he was like, no, we're doing this pull through, and we're going to do it ASAP, and it's going to be great, and he's going to do fine. Because originally, I was anti-pull through. I was scared of what a pull-through life looked like. And, like, would he be continent? Would he be made fun of? Would he be bullied? Would he be unhappy? What would the diaper rash be like? Would it really be so horrendous? I would also like to point out right now, for anyone that needs it, sometimes the diaper rash isn't horrendous. Sometimes you're lucky and you avoid the diaper rash altogether because we got that pull through done in November, and it was the best decision we ever made. It was a 9.5-hour surgery. He spent a week and a half in the hospital afterwards. We got to come home and start everything, but he quickly had to go back because he had an obstruction. As he used to be Franklin's MO, he gets ileus or obstructions really easily. So we had to rush him back up to Denver, and we had to do another emergency surgery. So that was 12 and 13. They fixed that, luckily. That was the only time I've ever had De La Torre because he came out, because I was down south when they called me. They're like, we had to rush him back. And I'm like, okay, I'm rushing up. And they got him back 5 minutes before I pulled in. So I didn't even get to see Frankie that morning before he went back. And so when De La Torre came out, I remember just breaking and sobbing. And I was like, I'm not a hugger, but can I please hug you? Because I'm scared. And he was like, you can hug me, but there's nothing to be scared about. He's already out. He's fine. He's like, Grandpa had him. And I was like, okay, I don't know why we saying Grandpa. It's a Saturday. You must be really not feeling it, but it is what it is. And this was all going on during Frankie's birthday week. He was getting ready to turn one. And so the whole time I'm like, I've given up. He's not going home for his birthday. It's fine. He'll spend his first birthday in the hospital. He'll have plenty more. And De La Torre walks in on the 17th with two gifts and discharge papers. And it's important to note that Frankie was born on the 18th, meaning that we were going to make it out just in time. And make it out, we did. I'm not sure if you ever got to see it, but we got to get Frankie a nice birthday cake. It was a nice blue heart cake, and it literally just said, Frankie survived. Because it's exactly how I felt about the first year of his life. I wish you could see my planner about how busy he stays. He keeps me between these two. It's crazy. But he is so strong and so smart. Like, he was walking by 14 months. After 14 surgeries, to be walking by 14 months is insane. Especially considering they're all gut surgeries. So, like, those ab muscles, at least this is what PT said, because PT was working hard with him. We were very blessed that we live in a place that he qualifies for Medicaid, which is like our state insurance. So he gets OT, PT, speech, and feeding all provided every single day, every single week. So he's been in therapy his whole life, and it's done wonders for him. At first, when they put him in therapies, I was like really offended. I was like, he just got out of the NICU. Like, he doesn't need therapy. And then he kept readmitting. I'm like, okay, maybe he does need therapy. Maybe he could benefit just a wee bit. I lost track again.
That's all good. That's all good. I'm forever doing that. But yeah, no, it is. He's very helpful, especially with ab muscles, you know, because we just haven't got necessarily, depending on, you know, the length of Hirschsprungs you have, the muscles there, you know, we have to work a lot harder, you know, sitting up and all of that stuff. It is a tough one. So yeah, physical therapy is brilliant. Really, really good. So I'm so glad he's doing well with that.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We were at November, we're at December, made it home for the birthday. Now where are we at? Oh my God, we're to the good part. So we get home, we're getting to the good part. We're home from the hospital after this pull through. And we're going to slowly work up our way to feeds. And the best part is, because I'm so type A, GI basically said, you control his feeds, you do it, you report back to us what you're doing. And I was like, cool, I got this. I know what I'm looking for. I'm looking and I'm waiting, because at first they gave us a dumping max, which was like 30 kilograms per whatever. And like basically it was like 30 mils per kilogram that you could put out before you're dumping. Well, once we got the pull through, it just became about his rash. So feed him till he gets a rash, except he never got a rash. So he kept eating. He went from eating half an ounce of food to maybe an ounce and a half of solids at a time. He started eating like 2 to 3 ounces from a bottle. And you guys come off TPN. We slowly worked our way down. We got his TPN to where it had no lipids in it. And it was down to where he was only getting 150 calories and he was just getting fluids, basically. And we took it away. We gave him a G-tube. And it worked wonders. Now, granted, we have to do 8 ounces a day of fluid, free fluid. We have to do 10 ounces of formula fluid a day and then all of his meds. And then he's still on newborn feeding schedule at 18 months. However, no centralized, no TPN. I will take a newborn feeding schedule, 8 bottles a day, any day of the week, over a centralized.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think that's, no, but that's really, really good to see, you know, some positives in there as well. Because again, it can be, I guess, one of those situations where, you know, like you said, you're forever being admitted into hospital and this surgery and 14 surgeries. And you think, well, when is this going to sort of, you know, break off a little bit? When are we going to have a bit of a break or a bit of some good news?
That's how it feels right now, but it's fine. I know our day is coming because, like, right now, he has been admitted most of June. Kept getting GI bugs. I'm not sure if you saw that, but he literally could not quit getting GI bugs. And I kept making him dehydrated to the point that his GI even was like, hey, I'm sorry we took the central line. And I'm like, don't be sorry you took the central line. Don't be sorry. I don't want that thing back. I'm good. I will take the dehydration. That's a simple admit and some fluids. Plus, like, as much as everyone's like, oh my God, another admit. I don't feel that way. I love our little hospital. Like, they suck. But at the same time, like, yeah, admits suck. But, like, that's a great hospital. Their workers are great. They all love Frankie. I'm fine with it. If we have to go, we have to go. At least he's alive and he's stable. I'm pretty easy to please.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes we don't want a lot, do we? You know?
No.
We just kind of, yeah, we want the simple stuff sometimes. And sometimes that is, yeah, that's all we want.
Sometimes, hey, all you need is to be on the fifth floor instead of pick you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's like, whatever, we're here. And that's pretty much how Frankie feels about it. I think maybe that's where Frankie gets it. It's a little bit. We're both just kind of, this is what Frankie is like. You asked about Frankie's pain tolerance and how he reacts to surgeries. This is essentially it, but in toddler form. It is what it is. It's going to happen, and it's going to be what it's going to be. We can't do nothing about it.
No, definitely. But it's, yeah, and it is. It's one of those things sometimes you do just sort of soldier on as a Hirschsprung's kid. You know, it is one of those things sometimes where you do kind of, and again, being as young as he is, you know, expressing that can be a tough one.
Oh, it is. Oh, I forgot to tell you. We're doing a research study with the Denver Hospital about behaviors and, like, the life of a Hirschsprung's family and short gut family.
Ah, what? Does that, is that sort of questionnaires and stuff?
It questionnaires and stuff. And basically, we've already started it. And one of the biggest ones, and that's like part of what you were talking about that made me think of it, is that some of these kids with these issues have like really bad headbanging issues and like they throw fits. And I thought that was autism in Franklin. And turns out it's just the trauma. So like, yeah, he's a strong dude, but like it definitely affects him. I definitely fully plan on putting him in therapy when he gets older and he's old enough. Like, he's a little young for it, but, like, it's happening when he's, like, 6.
Yeah.
Because he is a headbanger. He will, like, literally just wail off and smack his head to the ground.
I'd be really interested to find out the results of that study.
Send it to you.
Yeah, I'd be very, very interested. Really, really interested because I think that will be, yeah, incredibly relevant
It's a whole quality of life. It'll be so great. Mm. And we got to be a part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think that would be, yeah. I'd love to see the results of that, because I think that would be. Do you know roughly when results will be out, or they've not said?
They've not said. We just started it. We just started phase one.
Well, it's gonna be a while.
I get excited about things.
That's good. Always good to be excited about stuff.
I'm hoping that we can use one of these bowel management techniques up at Denver to get him cottoned eventually when he's ready and he's of age. I'm hoping that he goes on and like gets to grow up like a normal boy. I am fearful that we eventually have to return TPN and something goes wrong, but I'm hoping for the best, you know? Above all else, I don't have big hopes and dreams for Frankie beyond being happy and content with who he is and knowing that he's perfect the way he is and knowing that he's always going to have his mom and his dad and there's nothing wrong with you. There's not a damn thing wrong with you. I don't care that you're missing so much colon. I don't care that you've had so many surgeries and that you've got so many scars. You're perfect the way you are. And as long as he knows that, then that's all I need for his future.
Absolutely. Brilliantly put. Really, really well put. And this has been really, really good to chat to you. I've loved having you on. And I wish, you know, yourself, Frankie, the rest of your family, all the very, very best for whatever comes in the future.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show and we'll bring you another episode soon.